Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, kids, welcome inside the playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Thanks for your patience yesterday. Obviously had some college basketball duty to take care of in central New York, but thanks to AK-47 for standing in. Now you must know the imposters are gone. The real deal is back. Sorry, Kevin.
No offense taken. We were just keeping the seat warm for you.
No, I appreciate you guys sitting in. But what I want to know is, though, as I understand, you guys were absolutely hammered with emails yesterday. So where the hell are they?
I don't know. They probably got cleaned out after yesterday. We had at one point, Andy, when he sat in the chair, we went from somewhere along the lines of like 15 to 20 all the way up to over 100.
Really?
Yeah, we had 112 new emails in the inbox at our high water point in the show yesterday.
Were those all specifically for you guys?
Yeah, it was very impressive.
That's very impressive. So where the hell are they around here?
I have no
idea. I mean, is that should I take a big hint there? I guess there's just no love, I suppose.
Well, I think it was just like a spur-of-the-moment new thing, and a lot of the listeners were listening to PFW in Progress,
yep.
And were kind of dreading having like a replay of PFW in Progress, so they started to write in. And Andy was, you know how big Andy's head is, was basically like, if you show me enough love and you write in enough, and he wanted this cute girl to send him a picture with an email attachment and all that stuff.
See, now he's that's like, cheesy.
And he's like, if all this happens, then I'll do an AK-47 show. And so I think the listeners responded to that because they were kind of yearning for some live programming as opposed to a replay.
I you know what? I totally concur about that. But, you know, Andy's, you know, he's resorting to, you know, cheeseball tactics.
He's got a big head. We all know this.
We know this. That's true.
And the listeners know this.
Looking for pictures and things like that.
But it was actually...
You know, we're all about substance here in the playbook.
I know.
Right?
That's why it's called the playbook. But it was pretty cool, John. I actually was able to, while we were in the program yesterday, I was able to kind of, you know, I've learned a lot from you over the past 5 months or so since I've been here, and I was able to like pull up my Facebook account, and that was another way to communicate with some of the listeners.
Absolutely.
Because Andy and Fred and Paul and those guys, Facebook has kind of like passed them over. They don't really know a whole lot about it. And so once I kind of explained to Andy what it was, and in one of the breaks, I kind of showed him, hey, these are listeners writing basically emails on our wall here to try to, you know, communicate with us. And he's like, okay, well, maybe you should read some of those. And I was like, that's what I've been telling you for the last 2 hours. So...
it's all good.
We kind of fought through that wall, so it was a really fun time, and hopefully a lot of the listeners enjoyed it.
Well, you know, that's great, and believe me, I appreciate when you guys have to stand in because of my other broadcast duties, which unfortunately turn out to be, well, not unfortunately for me, but maybe for some listeners, they turn out to be prevalent at this time of year when you're going from football to basketball and sinking into that. So, you know, but we will squeeze in as many as we can throughout the course of the rest of the season until it's all over. And, of course, the next time the Patriots have to go on the road, we hope, will be Cowboy Stadium in Arlington for the Super Bowl.
For sure.
You know, so we'll continue to try to hold down the fort between now and then and hope for good things to come.
But playbook's coming back strong today, though. We got a pretty good lineup here for you.
I appreciate that. Yes, we do. And I will mention that coming up in 10 minutes, Sam Munson, who writes for ProFootballFocus.com, is going to join us. And we mentioned this briefly last week, and I know you guys were hammering on him yesterday. But Sam, this is the publication, the website. It's a subscription service that basically had Brady listed fourth in the MVP voting.
And he had zero first-place votes from any of those writers.
Which is shocking to me. And I guess Fred made the contact with him in the press box in Buffalo this last weekend.
Yeah, it was a really interesting story. He happened to be kind of in town covering the game and realized maybe through, you know, the badges that Fred, Andy, and Paul and those guys have that, you know, they were visiting media and that they were the PFW guys that did the radio show. And, you know, he wanted to basically come on our airways and just kind of explain their point of view and how they came to the conclusion Brady was fourth in line and not worthy of receiving any first place votes.
Okay. Well, we're going to get to the
bottom
of this. So
we all look forward to that.
We're going to get to the bottom of this coming up again in about 10 minutes with Sam Munson. In hour number two of the program, we'll have Armando Salguero, who covers the Miami Dolphins for the Miami Herald. He's going to join us here in Patriots Playbook. If you're wondering about Eric Scalavino, he did mention right at the end of the PFW show, they've changed practice time
and
player availability.
He put on his jacket and sprinted out the door and was like, I got to go, Fred.
Right. So he is out the door. He is covering the media access portion of practice outside on the fields at Gillette as we speak. So if we get some kind of a practice update that is worth bringing to you, that's, you know, a little bit out of the ordinary or anything new and breaking, then we'll have Eric provide that for us. If not, then Eric will be back in the playbook in the opening hour on tomorrow's program. But we got a ton of stuff to get to today. You know, I've had several people post on Facebook, and by the way, let me fill you in once again in case you're relatively new to the procedure here. There are many different ways that you can converse with us here on the program, not the least of which is the standard email way, webradio@patriots.com. That's how you reach us. webradio@patriots.com. Number two, the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482 is the phone number. Area code 508-543-7482. If you're a frequenter to patriots.com radio, you ought to have that telephone number ingrained in your brain, is all I'm going to say. Just melded somewhere in there, tattooed or branded somewhere. And then, of course, we have the Facebook option as well. If you'd like to converse with us via Facebook, join along. You can search for me, John Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name. If you're not already aboard on the friends list, you can submit the friend request. I will answer it in the affirmative. Just make sure you include in the note that you're a listener to Patriots Playbook, so that way we'll make sure that we can have an affirmative return and answer to your request. And then you can post on the webpage, or you can use the chat function as well on Facebook during the course of the program. I always have my Facebook page open during the program, so a lot of different ways that we can converse and go back and forth on ideas and questions and answers during the course of our program. So that's how you can reach us here on the show. Now, a lot of things have transpired over the course of even the last 24 hours that we can get to. How much did you guys do any nitpicking at all yesterday?
We did a little bit of nitpicking.
A little bit of nitpicking.
We picked some nits, as Andy would like to say.
Okay, well that's all good. And I will, you know, because normally that's what we do on Tuesdays is
we
nitpick
can extend
the previous
it a
Sunday's game. We will extend that somewhat into today's show. We try to generally on Tuesdays get rid of the previous week's game and look forward to next week by Wednesday. But because, you know, I didn't have the chance to be here off doing college basketball snowy Syracuse, New York last night, we'll allow for some limited nitpicks. So if you have something really that's just, you know, burning you that you really wanted to share, then by all means, fire off via email, Facebook, or call us on the phone on the Ace Ticket Hotline, and we can get to that. I do have a couple of superlatives that may or may not have slid through the cracks in your reading and your catching up on the Patriots, but I will share some of those here during the program as well. We do also have the Pro Bowl to talk about. And again, I'm not entirely certain how much the PFW guys talked about the Pro Bowl additions to the Patriots, but there are a couple, I think, of guys on the Pro Bowl list that, shall we say, raise a question mark.
And actually, as we head into our guest here in a few moments, John, Pro Football Focus listed 10 Pro Bowl selections, and they pretty much ranked them the 10 worst selections, and Brandon Merriweather was number 2 on that list,
right,
behind Pouncey, the center for the Steelers.
Okay, so you know what, and that may not be a pick, though, I'll be honest with you, Kevin, that may not be a pick that too many people have a problem with in terms of being a highly questionable pick.
No, most of our listeners today have kind of voiced their opinion that it's kind of, we had one guy, this is a funny little story, it won't take long, that wrote to Paul Perillo on his personal email address while he was on his honeymoon yesterday.
Really?
This guy's on his honeymoon saying that the Merriweather selection of the Pro Bowl ruined his honeymoon.
Oh, come on. Now, that guy's got, he's got to have a
he should have other things to be doing.
You know what? I feel really sorry for his spouse. Because if Merriweather can ruin your honeymoon, oh, dear. That's pretty bad. You know, we'll run through the list again here in a moment because I want to make sure that we're able to get Sam Munson on time here when we're able to lock him up. But At the same time, I'm going to give you just a kind of an overall view, and I do want your comments on the Patriots Pro Bowlers. webradio@patriots.com. So fire off the emails, get them going if you got some comments on the guys who've made the Pro Bowl team. 508-543-7482, the Ace Ticket Hotline, and Facebook page is open. So let's hit all of that. You know, the Pro Bowl game is a game that the Patriots really, they don't care about. And I think that they've made that very clear over the course of the last few years. But if the Patriots don't get the players into the Pro Bowl that you feel are deserving, believe me when I say this, they use this internally. They turn it around. This team is as good as any team in all of sportdom in finding the proverbial chip on the shoulder and using it to their emotional advantage. And so if there are some guys who are perceived snubs in that Patriots locker room, believe me, they're going to use this to their advantage. So if you're interested in the ultimate prize, if you're interested in the Patriots winning a fourth Super Bowl, which certainly seems to be a possibility now, which again still blows me away. A month ago, there's no way. I don't think anybody would have pictured this. But if you're one of those people that thinks that this is now a real possibility and you're fired up and you're ready to go and you want this team to get there, then, you know, the ultimate prize is the Super Bowl. The Pro Bowl matters not a shred. Now, I do have my own opinions on Merriweather and, in fact, Logan Mankins in particular, who was his Pro Bowl selection for the Patriots, and I will share it with you coming up in a bit, but there's so much to get to. We've got that on the table. And I also have a question of the day that I want to throw out here at the very beginning. And this comes from one of our faithful listeners, Joshua. He posted this on Facebook earlier today, and he said, this should be your question of the day. And I said, you know what, Joshua, that's not a bad idea. So I'm going to throw it out to you, and I want everyone to comment on this today. And again, you've got email, you've got the phone, you've got the Facebook page to comment on this. But Joshua wanted to know, and he wanted us to kind of kick around today, who deserves the most credit for the Patriots' success? Tom Brady or Coach Belichick? Now think about that. I guess it really depends on your point of view. It may be a chicken or egg proposition for you, and if it is, that's fine. But you can really take this question a little bit deeper than just for this year. And I'm assuming that's what Joshua meant. Who deserves the most credit for the Patriots' success this year? Is it Tom Brady or is it Coach Belichick? I think you can also go right back to the year 2001. And so you're looking at basically the last 10 seasons of Patriots football, which have included four Super Bowl appearances. And three wins over the last 10 years. Who deserves the most credit? Now, if you're, you know, someone who believes in, you know, the establishing of the pecking order and the bringing in of the personnel, well, then clearly, you know, I would think Belichick would make the most sense. But if you're also one of those, and I guess I kind of lean this way, but if you're one of those that believes that the players play the game, the players win, the players lose, the coaches can get them prepared, but it's the players that have to execute. If they don't execute, no matter how good the game plan is, the players don't win. And if you believe that way, then you're probably going to side toward Tom Brady having or needing a little bit more of the quote-unquote credit for the Patriots' success. I think it's an interesting Zen question. There really is no right or wrong answer, but I would be very interested to find out where the majority of our listeners and contributors, especially here inside Patriots Playbook, how they feel about this particular issue. Who deserves the most credit for the Patriots' success, Tom Brady or Coach Belichick? Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482, webradio@patriots.com, and Facebook us. So we've got that, we've got the Pro Bowl issues. You know, the Pro Bowl, you know, I guess I'm not terribly surprised. I guess, in all honesty, I expected the overall results to be as they were. I thought that there would probably be a couple of snubs or a couple of guys that I think deserved having mentioned, especially in the offensive line. There are a couple of guys that probably snuck in there that probably didn't deserve to be in there, and that's fine. We're going to get to that in just a moment. All right, Sam Munson works, covers is a part of ProFootballFocus.com, and he joined us here inside Patriots Playbook. Sam, it's a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much, and I appreciate your reaching out to Fred Kirsch in Buffalo this weekend.
No problem. Great to be on. Thanks.
Thank you. You know, I'm sure you probably realize why we might have a particular issue with Pro Football Focus in light of the fact that, you know, Tom Brady has had some record-setting performances yet again, and that this football team seems to be certainly in a position to have some success in the postseason, and we'll just leave it at that. And in light of what happened last night with Philadelphia and Minnesota, one of the guys that's been at the top of your MVP favorite list all year long, and Michael Vick, looks to be, you know, sent back to the pack. So I guess I'm wondering, the first article that I saw, and this is the one that really kind of got us going over the course of the last week or so, had to do with MVP favorites in the MVP debate, and it was an article that was posted, I believe, in December, on the 21st by Jonathan Comey. Is that correct, or Comey?
Comey.
Okay, Comey. And he had Philip Rivers at the top of the list of the MVP debate and had the most of the points and first-place votes, I guess, from amongst your staff members. You had Rivers ranked 1, Vic ranked 2, Matt Ryan ranked 3, Tom Brady ranked 4, Aaron Rodgers ranked 5. Now, honestly, I don't have too much of an issue with Philip Rivers. I don't even really have too much of an issue with Michael Vick. I think what most Patriot fans are having a problem with is that Tom Brady is ranked 4th when you look at the overall success of this team. So I'd really kind of like to know, if you can help us out here, how you guys arrive at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the first point that we're trying to get across is that sometimes base statistics don't tell the whole story of what's going on. So the Chicago game's a great example. You know, Tom Brady throws for the 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions in a blizzard in Chicago, and has a, you know, quarterback rating of 113, and everybody says he has a fantastic game, and, you know, lock the MVP vote up right away. But if you break it down throw by throw, there were 3 balls that Brady threw that were in the hands of Bears defenders. On any other night, you know, they could pull 3 interceptions. You put 3 interceptions on that stat line, and, you know, he's got a quarterback rating in the 60s. People talk about what a disaster of a game it was. So just from the same throw from the active Bears defenders dropping it can go from being a terrible, you know, game-losing throw to being forgotten about because they dropped it, so it doesn't really count.
Okay.
So the first thing we do is that, you know, a bad throw gets a negative grade regardless of whether the defender drops it at the end of it all. So a lot of our grades on Brady is taken down by the fact that, you know, he's got some bad throws that aren't necessarily picked up in the raw statistics. The second thing is that we take a bit of credit away from Brady because we feel that he's asked to do less than some of the other quarterbacks you're talking about. I'll give you an example. Brady has 319 of the 476 attempts that Brady has this season are 10 yards or under. So that's 67% of all the balls that Brady throws are under 10 yards. Now, no other top-ranked quarterback is over 55%. You know, Ryan's at 55, Rivers at 52, Aaron Rodgers 55, Manning's 54. So all of those guys are attempting balls further down the field than Brady is. I don't want to say he's attempting easier throws, but, you know, he's hitting guys a lot closer to the line of scrimmage. And if you're going to give the guy credit, you give him credit for being able to find the open receiver, which is definitely impressive. And you know, we've got no problem saying Brady's having a great season, but the point we're trying to get across is that everybody on the Patriots offense is having a very good season. Maybe no one guy is standing out to a kind of MVP level, but the whole team is playing well, you know, as a unit. And it just seems sometimes like people want to take that and give Brady all the credit. You know, start talking about how he's playing with undrafted players and he's making, you know, great players out of these guys. But, you know, these guys are good players themselves. They deserve some of the credit.
Okay. You know, the only thing that I could actually answer that is, you know, a guy like Matt Ryan has Michael Turner. You know, Michael Vick has LeSean McCoy, who I think were, you know, clearly you'd have to consider better backs than what the Patriots have. I would also argue that, you know, the Patriots have, what, 21 undrafted free agents on their roster, and yet this team is dominating its opposition. Neither Matt Ryan or Michael Vick or Philip Rivers can make the same claim.
No, but, I mean, undrafted players doesn't necessarily mean they're bad. I mean, you know, a guy like Danny Woodhead was undrafted, but anybody looking at him play now you know, would clearly say that, okay, the scouting just goofed, you know. The guy's not an undrafted player. He's a fantastic player, but people just didn't see it until he got a shot.
You're also aware, though, Sam, of a guy named Michael Jordan, correct?
Yeah.
In the NBA. Michael Jordan was an MVP, not just so much because he clearly had better talent, because he had the innate ability to make his teammates better. Scottie Pippen has Michael Jordan to thank for his becoming an all-time top 50 NBA player. Tom Brady has the same kind of ability that Michael Jordan has in making his teammates better. The proof is in wins and losses. The ultimate proof should be in wins and losses, should it not?
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely a case to be made that Brady does make people better, you know, as a leadership thing and as a sort of proxy of being on the same team. But, I mean, the same can be said for most of those guys out there. I mean, Peyton Manning has been getting stuff done with the same undrafted free agent players, you know. The difference is that when the Patriots have found undrafted players that can play, Danny Woodhead steps in and he's an excellent back. Peyton Manning loses Austin Colley and Blair White steps in and Blair White is no Austin Colley. So suddenly Peyton Manning, you know, is struggling. So I think there's a huge thing to be said that the Patriots system, be it Bill Belichick, be it, you know, the entire coaching, be it even to an extent Tom Brady, puts guys in the best situation to succeed. Every one of those players is put in the situation that plays to their strengths, and I think that's huge. But we find it difficult to give all that credit to Tom Brady. You know, it's a system thing. It's a team award. Well, it's not a team award, but it's a team achievement to get all those wins.
So just to be clear then, you're of the opinion, and I suppose then this is of the opinion of your staff at Pro Football Focus, that the Patriots system actually works against Brady in terms of being called the MVP?
Yeah, I guess you could put it like that. What we're saying is that the Patriots system is what's getting them the wins. Tom Brady is certainly a part of that, but we don't feel that he deserves as much of the credit as other people are giving him when they just look, you know, the equation is not simply raw numbers plus wins equals MVP. You know, there's a lot more, there's so many more variables in any given game than that, that we find it difficult to separate Tom Brady from everybody else in that offense.
Okay. Let's then look at this a little bit more statistically then. And I appreciate your willingness to engage me on this, Sam. I know it's probably not easy. You probably realize you're stepping into a bit of a hornet's nest here. you know, but that's fine. This is all good debate here. I like it. Quarterback rating. Now,
yeah.
Is that not a formula that sort of, you know, isn't that supposed to basically determine statistically the best quarterback in the league? Because Brady right now, best rating in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's certainly what it's supposed to do. But again, what that can't do is tell you whether the throw was any good or not. So Aaron Rodgers a couple of weeks ago threw a 50-yard pass to Greg Jennings, hit him in the hands behind the coverage. Somehow Greg Jennings managed to deflect that ball to a cornerback, interception. Now that torpedoes his quarterback rating for that day for what was an excellent pass. And on the flip side, you can get a pass that's a horrible pass straight to a defender, hits him in the hands, drops. That doesn't, you know, that just goes down as an incompletion. But if it was, you know, any other day, that defender brings it in and that torpedoes his quarterback rating.
Okay.
So it's certainly a tool, but it's massively flawed in terms of trying to tell the story of what happened with all of those throws.
All right. It sounds to me then like it's a little bit of a, it sounds to me like you've got some opinion in there, which I guess is fair. I just want to make sure that we're clear about that because quite honestly, if a throw is completed, it's considered a good throw, regardless of who it bounces off of, regardless of a Bears defender dropping a ball or what have you. It, you know, you can't do a, you know, there's no way you can accurately gauge intent. Just and if a guy intends to pick it off but doesn't come up with it, he doesn't come up with it. It's an incompletion. Let me also go a step further. Wes Welker leads the NFL in drops. So, you know, those are incomplete passes, and yet Brady's, you know, he's still way on top of a guy like Phillip Rivers right now in passer rating. So I the only thing I can gather out of this is that you've got some sort of opinion mechanism put into this MVP debate that does not seem to hold water with a statistics-based most valuable player contest here.
I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, I'm not sure you can gauge intent, but if a ball hits a defender in the hands because
and he drops it, it's an incompletion.
Yeah,
it's an incompletion.
But it's also a throw that's a lot worse than a drop, say. From
you don't know
receiver.
That. You don't know that though, Sam. Because what if the receiver ran the wrong route? Okay.
Yeah.
You cannot judge intent. Is my point.
But you can see a linebacker dropping underneath cover. You know, underneath a route. I mean, that's just a quarterback not seeing that linebacker. It's.
I would disagree with
you. That.
I disagree with you because you don't know what
that
the.
Not,
you
and
you don't know what the play call
is. Throw.
Yeah, but you still don't know what the play call is. If you knew what the play call was, then you could judge intent. But you don't know the play call, so if you see a linebacker on the route, okay, that's great. But you still can't judge intent of where the quarterback intended the ball to go.
But if a quarterback is throwing a quick slant and he doesn't see a linebacker come out underneath that, hits the linebacker in the hands, I mean, how can you look at that in any other way than it's a poor decision to put the ball in the air?
That's an obvious one. But,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean,
most of these are extremely obvious throws. They're not, you know, esoteric subtleties we're dealing with here. A lot of them are just poor decisions. Brady makes them like any other quarterback.
And yet, by your rating system here, you think that Brady has made more poor decisions than the other quarterbacks?
No, not necessarily that. What we're saying is that, he's making some poor decisions that don't necessarily show up in the raw statistics. But I think why we have him graded below certain other quarterbacks comes down to the fact that he's being asked to do less. He's not making as many tough throws that other quarterbacks are making. So that
Why should that be graded against him?
Because, if the guy's making tougher throws, then surely that's something you should, look at as a positive.
But again, you don't know. Nobody knows if it's a tougher throw or not. There's no way you can judge that without knowing the intent of the play.
Well, no, hang
just
on.
Based
guy,
on length if, of pass pattern, that's ridiculous.
If a guy is 5 yards open coming across the middle of the field and you hit him, for a first down, it's a much easier throw than if a guy's running a 15-yard out and you have to put the ball in the air for 30 yards.
I disagree.
Against close coverage.
I totally disagree. It depends on the coverage.
Well, that's what we're saying.
If he's running a 15-yard down and out and he's wide open, then you're an idiot if you don't hit him.
But
you can also
saying.
Have press coverage at the line of scrimmage on a slant route. Be a much tougher pass to throw.
Yeah, which is why that's taken into account in our ratings. You'll get a higher grade for a throw against tight coverage than you will for a throw that's wide open. All of this is taken into account when we grade the plays individually on a play-by-play basis.
All right. Well, again, it still kind of sounds like there's almost a little bit of a double standard. Let me ask you this. After this past weekend, is Tom Brady still in fourth place in your poll?
We've actually just all sent in our ballots for the MVP, so at the moment I have no idea what the MVP list looks like.
When would you have that?
It should go up today or tomorrow sometime, so okay. Definitely look out for it.
Would it be possible for somebody there on the staff to send it to us? Because, frankly, this is, it's great publicity for your website, number one, and it's great debate for us. So, I'm of the opinion that any publicity is good publicity in this particular issue. And, our fans are obviously all charged up about it. So, taking nothing away, really, from Phillip Rivers or the season that Michael Vick has had, and Matt Ryan is obviously a product of Boston College, so he's got a lot of fans up here in this area as well. But when you consider the bottom line, and the bottom line in the National Football League and in any sport is to win, and does your leader, does your quarterback, does your point guard, does whomever you have as your go-to guy on your team pick a sport, does he make others around you better? And if you can answer that in the affirmative, that in and of itself should be the differential, definition of MVP, should it not?
Sure, but I think that answer is yes to pretty much all of those quarterback candidates. Matt Ryan has had throws this season that have won games, with the game on the line, clutch throws. The same can go for Peyton Manning. He's making, poor receivers better. Phillip Rivers is making those around him better. He's got guys coming off the street during the season. All of these guys make people around them better. That's why they're quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, when you start talking about MVPs and there's five or six guys that are playing out of their skin, you're really nitpicking when you're criticizing these guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, we don't want it to seem like we're saying Tom Brady is a bad player. Tom Brady's having an extremely good season. He's got the Patriots, the number one seed, the offense is rolling. But what we're trying to say is that there's a lot of guys in that Patriot offense playing well. Nobody, you know, nobody's letting a side down, and it's a big, it's a team effort. 53 guys make a win. Sorry, 45 guys on game day make a win. You know, or 45 guys lose a game. It's difficult to pin all that on one guy.
Well, that may be true. I will certainly allow for some of that. But I guess it really boils down to, and this is a discussion we've had here with our fans and on Patriots Football Weekly and all over, you know, this organization as well over the course of the last few weeks. An MVP should be someone who is a statistical leader, we'll grant you that, but also an emotional leader. And this guy just happens to be both. Tom Brady happens to be both. For the best team with the best record in arguably, and maybe even inarguably, the toughest conference and the hardest or toughest division in pro football. So how does this not stack up in his favor?
Yeah, and I'll definitely say one other thing is that there's a lot of intangibles that there's no way we can hope to quantify, you know, just from watching games, even on a play-by-play basis. There, you know, there's certain off-the-field stuff. There's intangible stuff. There's a certain, you know, leadership quality that we can't, you know, attempt to try and put into figures. So there's always going to be argument to say that despite the physical stuff, despite everything that's going on, Brady may be better than we're giving him credit for, which is perfectly fair, and, you know, we're happy to see that.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, I'll give you one more statistic that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of when these guys get blitzed and when they come under pressure, Brady's quarterback rating is 118 when he faces no pressure on plays, which is about the same as other people. Rodgers is 114, Rivers is 120. Brady's quarterback rating drops to 86 when he gets pressure and drops to 80 when he's blitzed. Rodgers just drops to 103 when he's blitzed. Rivers drops to 104. So Brady, this season, the offensive line is doing an extremely good job. When they keep him clean, he'll pick teams to pieces all day. But when he does get blitzed, when he does face pressure, he's dropping, his performance drops off significantly more than some of those other guys.
Okay.
Matt Ryan, actually, incidentally, is a real enigma in that his quarterback rating doesn't drop at all. His quarterback rating is level at just about 90 from plays where he's not pressured, plays where he's blitzed, and plays where he gets actual pressure.
All right, you know, that is interesting, and I would not have guessed that. However, even if what you're saying is true, I have every reason to believe it is, because you're the guys that, you know, do this for a living, the proof is still in the one-loss record, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, like I say, that's 45 guys. That's three phases of the ball. You know, it's difficult.
But don't 45 guys also contribute to the one-loss record? That's all I'm saying here.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
it may very well be that Brady's record, his passer rating goes down when he's blitzed. But the bottom line is that team overcomes it more so than the other guys. And ultimately, you know, plug in another quarterback to the Patriots. You're saying that if we plug in another quarterback to the Patriots, that the Patriots have a better chance of having success than those other teams?
That's difficult to try and assess. I mean, the point we're trying to get across is that the Patriots system has obviously been tailored to put every guy there in the best situation to, you know, to maximize what they do. So it's difficult to say that you could just parachute in a different quarterback and everything would work the same or better, because that different quarterback might have different strengths. I mean, Brady has shown that he's an excellent decision maker and is extremely good at not turning the ball over when he's asked to throw short over the middle. You know, it's not necessarily, you can't necessarily say that any of those other quarterbacks would do as well at that, but they might do things better if they're asked to attack the seams deeper, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's very tough to try and, you know, cross-compare. That's different offenses, different systems, that sort of thing.
Right.
I mean, all we can do is analyze a guy in his offense.
Right. Which is why, then, I think it's kind of difficult, really, to get sometimes a fair comparison when you're bringing teammates and systems into the equation. And intent, you have to kind of look at the numbers, number one, and you just really have to put it up to the eye test. Does it match up? The smell test. Does it smell right? Does it feel right? Does this guy, according to looking at the eyeball test here, does he make his team better? And the only way that you can ultimately prove that is by looking at wins and losses. If the Patriots were 8-7 as opposed to 13-2, nobody would have an argument. Nobody would say anything. Oh, he's had a good statistical year, but unfortunately the team hasn't won. So how can he be an MVP? And that's the argument that I think Patriots fans are looking at in terms of especially Phillip Rivers. Okay.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Michael Vick now as well, when you take last night in consideration, Vick was pounded, and he didn't even play the first two games of this year as a starter in Philadelphia. So it's hard, really, to quantify his true value as an MVP when he hasn't even been a part of the team for a couple of wins.
Yeah, I think that game last night took Michael Vick out of MVP consideration. I'm not necessarily saying it's right, but like you say, he didn't play some of the games. The Eagles showed with Kevin Cobb that they're not a terrible team when Vic doesn't play, and he was, brutal last night. He threw a couple of interceptions, or he threw a couple of balls that should have been intercepted. He threw a couple of interceptions that were horrible. I can't see any way he gets MVP after that game. But, I mean, like you said at the start of this, Phillip Rivers is, the one guy that you wouldn't necessarily have a problem with as MVP, and yet his team didn't make the playoffs.
Because he had an outstanding individual season. But
Absolutely. In
my own personal feeling is that you have to quantify team results into an MVP performance. It doesn't mean anything if a guy throws for 6,000 yards and his team sucks.
But how badly would they suck if he hadn't thrown for 6,000 yards?
They'd suck worse. But again, you can't quantify that. The only result is in wins and losses. That's the ultimate result. And the players themselves would tell you that.
Definitely, but the players themselves, in fact, Brady has told people that, it's a team achievement. It's not all him out there. And I think that's a very fair assessment in that all we're trying to do is to try and separate a player from his environment, which is an extremely tough thing to do.
Sam, do you really think Tom would say anything else other than that?
No, obviously. I mean, that's what he has to say. But in this case, I think he's right. All you have to do is to watch any given play from the Patriots and ask yourself, would any other quarterback have made that throw? I think that's what we're getting at, is that if you watch most of the Patriots' plays, they march down the field and they do it extremely efficiently, extremely well, but Brady's not asked to do a whole lot. He's asked to find that open guy, which is fair enough. That in itself is an achievement. But he's making throws to open receivers underneath. Wes Welker is pretty much impossible to cover across the middle. You can't cover him with a linebacker. You can't cover him with a DB. You just have to look at what they did to the Jets. The Jets couldn't cover Wes Welker.
Well, the football, there's no way to answer that. You're absolutely right about that. You can't say, all right, let's plug Phillip Rivers into the Patriots, and would he have the same results? You can't really quantify that. You just don't know, which is why you have to go with what you do know. Let me ask you this, Sam, and thank you again for the debate. This has actually been great fun today. After last night, do you still have Vic rated ahead of Brady?
I dropped Vic below Brady. I can't speak for anybody else, but I only dropped him just below him. But for those reasons I gave, one terrible game, I wouldn't take him out of the ranking, but he didn't play for a couple of other games, and the Eagles didn't stink without him. So I can't put Vic right up at the top for those reasons. But there's other players there that have played the full season that even with one average game, I wouldn't take out of the ranking.
Can you tell us who you have up at the top right now and why you've got him there?
I think I had, let me just check. Sure. I think Aaron Rodgers was second, and I had Matt Ryan number one, despite the game against the Saints, where he wasn't terrible, but he was only average. Rodgers, I think, after a bit of a slow start to the season, has been spectacular down the stretch. I mean, he's making all the passes, and, the Packers need him, and they're rolling towards the playoffs with him. And Matt Ryan, I think he's the perfect example of a guy who doesn't look brilliant when you look at his raw statistics. But if you watch some of the throws he makes late in the game with the game on the line, you're talking about converting third and longs with pinpoint passes to receivers. And not just Roddy White. You're talking, making guys like hitting guys like Michael Jenkins down the sideline for perfect conversions on third and long to extend the drive to keep games alive.
All right, he was down 3 points with 3 minutes to go in the game on Monday night and could not get his team down the field. Would you still want him in there at quarterback over Tom Brady in the same situation?
But like I say, one game doesn't, that's one game. There's at least three or four games where he's been in that situation and he's gotten it done this season. So, I mean, I'm
but
not
his passer rating isn't near what Brady's is it?
No, absolutely. But like I say, it also doesn't drop when he's blitzed or when he's pressured. It stays at that constant 90. And he's
okay.
At,
well, then that tells me then when he's not being pressured, he's a lesser quarterback than Tom Brady. When
right.
it stands to reason, he should be a better quarterback than Tom Brady if he's not being pressured.
Well, maybe, but like I say, the entire game isn't no pressure. You're going to get pressure sometimes. And the difference, a lot of the times, the difference between quarterbacks is how they handle pressure. Look at Rex Grossman. Rex Grossman, early in his career, was fine if you didn't pressure him. But as soon as he pressured, he turned into an intercepting nightmare. If teams could keep Rex Grossman upright and without pressure, he'd actually be a viable NFL quarterback. But the difference is, as soon as he gets pressure, he's a disaster. So, I mean, you can't just look at how a guy performs without pressure. I think
you're
that,
absolutely
I think
right. What you have to do is you have to look what a quarterback does at all times, under pressure and not under pressure. And that's what you really have to judge as a fair estimate of a good quarterback, of a statistically good quarterback, of an MVP caliber quarterback. And when you do that, Brady's numbers come out on top.
Sure, but a lot of that is the product of throwing, you know, significantly larger proportion of his passes, a lot shorter and a lot easier, you know, close to line of scrimmage.
Well, we're getting back to a little bit more of an intent type of argument, which, you know, I think we've kind of agreed we can't really quantify unless, of course, you're in the huddle and you know exactly where the play is supposed to go.
Sure, but I guess what I'm saying is that if Matt Ryan was throwing 67% of his passes instead of 52% of his passes within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, would his quarterback rating still be 90, or would it be higher? I know there's no way of quantifying that, but, you know, again, it's a kind of... It's the eye test. What do you think he'd be able to do?
Precisely. That's really kind of what we have to rely on is the eye test. Sam Munson again from ProFootballFocus.com. Sam, this has been great fun. I'd love to revisit this with you again at some point. And if you could do us a favor, if you could send our producer, Kevin, I'm going to have you pick up the phone after we're disconnected here. But send him a note as to when your published results come out on the MVP vote, and then perhaps we can revisit this again at some point in time. But I've kept you way long enough today.
Sam,
I sure
Sam's
appreciate
got
your
my
time.
Email information.
Super.
Absolutely,
right.
Yeah.
Sam, thank you very, very much for the time today. Really appreciate that. I'll look forward to doing this again.
Thanks very much for having me on. Great.
You got it. Okay, fair enough. Sam Munson again from ProFootballFocus.com. That may have been one of the single most confusing things I have ever tried to do in terms of conducting an interview in my professional football life. I'm not laughing at him. I'm confounded. I'm absolutely confounded by the logic that's involved here, and there doesn't really seem to be any rhyme or reason to the logic, not only from Sam Munson, who clearly has done his homework. He's got the numbers all in front of him. That's what these guys do. That's why it's called Pro Football Focus. They analyze the numbers. But it seems to me where they run into trouble here and that they end up contradicting themselves in some arguments. And again, there's no question. First of all, I will quantify this, as I'm sure many of you know. Okay, this is Patriots.com radio. This program is Patriots Playbook. So naturally, there's going to be the benefit of the doubt given to Tom Brady here. But in trying to look at this as straight down the middle as you possibly can. And I've already admitted, you know what? Matt Ryan's had a good year. Phillip Rivers has had a good year statistically. But you still have to look at the overall team result. Their argument is, just to paraphrase a little bit what he was talking about, their argument is, well, the Patriots have better personnel surrounding the quarterback. Okay, I'll buy that to an extent. But then why is Aaron Rodgers, who hasn't played as many games as Tom Brady, why is he rated ahead of Tom Brady? Especially with Green Bay being a lesser team. They didn't even get a chance to play head-to-head, so to speak, when Green Bay was here because he was out injured.
And Matt Flynn played a hell of a game and almost won the game without
Rodgers.
Yeah,
Matt Flynn, hey, you could make an argument for Matt Flynn, that you could make over Aaron Rodgers.
Well, part of his argument was that the Eagles won games without Mike Vick and the Packers almost won one without Rodgers, so it's the same thing.
Yeah, it just seems like, you know, the further we went into this, the further we were going to end up contradicting ourselves, and I'm just like, wow, this is just, you know, for instance, just this last week, okay, Phillip Rivers lost to a bad Cincinnati team after the Chargers were eliminated from the playoffs. His quarterback rating was 82.9.
By the way, if you're going to compare team against team, Brady lit up the Bengals back in week one, right? Michael Vick, well, we saw what happened last night. He was horrendous. And then Brady in week eight against the Vikings, he had a rating of almost 101. So, okay, so there's an edge to Brady again. Again, against same teams now. We're talking about like opponents. Matt Ryan was 15 to 29 for 148 yards in their loss on Monday to New Orleans. Again, a loss. His rating was 77.9. Not even, that was pedestrian at best. Probably a poor performance. As poor a performance as Matt Ryan may have had statistically all year. And the Falcons did not clinch the division. They left the Saints back in the race, and they have not yet clinched home field advantage throughout the playoffs in the NFC. Brady, what did he do? Well, statistically, he was pedestrian for him. 15 to 27, 140 yards. He had five dropped passes, so those shouldn't count against him, right? Welker and Gronkowski, you know, were the chief culprits against Buffalo, were they not? But his quarterback rating was still 107. So he had the top QB rating of any of the contenders, really, of this last week. And yet, he's still not on top of their list for various reasons. I'm like, wow. Okay. All right.
And, John, just to prepare you, too, we are getting an insane flood of emails on our conversation, so you'll be getting those as well.
Throw them in. George is on Florida on the Ace Ticket Hotline. George, you're in the playbook.
Yeah, that guy, oh, my God. You know, he's made no sense whatsoever. What about common opponents? He didn't even bring that up. I mean, we faced how many number one defenses or top five defenses over the past 8 weeks? I mean, Pittsburgh, Ravens, the Green Bay Packers, the Chicago Bears. Come on, these defenses are crazy. And Brady still put up four TDs against some of these teams. And to use the players around him and this and that, it's unbelievable, Joe. I just, you know, I'm more than an uproar down here in Florida.
I got to tell you, George, that's why I mentioned what I did about the light comparisons against similar teams. You know, what Brady did against Minnesota, what Brady did against Cincinnati. I don't know. I'm sure that this had to somehow figured into their equation when they're working these numbers out. And yet, I'm led to one conclusion here. There is an anti-Tom Brady bias at Pro Football Focus. And if there's any kind of a bias, even if they had an anti-Michael Vick bias at Pro Football Focus, I would argue that they should not be considered a legitimate source because they've got some bias in their reasoning. There's no way that you should do this. You should let the numbers and the eye test speak for itself.
Now, John, do they actually, who votes for the MVP? Who is the actual voters for the
MVP? Their staff writers. Now, this is their vote for MVP. This is not the MVP. The MVP in the National Football League, I believe that's voted on by the coaches and players.
Okay. All right. All right, John, thank you for getting me in an uproar down here because I watch a lot of national down here and I listen to you guys when I can live and then on the pod there.
But, oh, I appreciate that.
Keep it up. Good work. And keep them debates going because I like getting the football juices flowing.
Awesome. Thanks, George. Appreciate you taking the time today. Thanks, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. So there you go. George in Florida on the Ace Ticket Hotline. It opens up a line there again at 508-543-7482 if you want to jump in and give that a try. I'm I'm still sitting here kind of chuckling to myself, to be quite honest with you. Oh, man alive. Let me see if I can get a couple of emails in here. But I'm going to start, though, with the Facebook page because I know it's also got some posts coming up here. Let me see here. Da, 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 da. Time out momentarily. Okay, here we go. All right, excuse me one second here. Got to update this. You know, this is what, you know, I need a producer to work on my computer here while I'm trying to hold a conversation with this guy. All right, Dagmar, our friend in Miami. I figured Dagmar would have something to say. He says, please, John, tell me this guy is joking. He is either a non-Patriots Brady fan or just a somebody trying to get some attention. First, he calls the Patriots Brady success a team success, and then he says that Brady is surrounded by players playing really well, and then says that his rating drops when he's under pressure more than the rest of the elite quarterbacks. Really? So has he ever stopped to think of who are in the receiving core of the Packers, Chargers, Colts, and Falcons? Is this guy joking or what? Is he high on something? Give me a break. Who has made a productive pair of rookie tight ends for his team? Who has carried the team on his shoulders so far? Sorry, man, find something else to smoke, because what you're doing is burning your brain cells, causing you to brain fart.
And Dagmar was so passionate about this, he just called up to make sure you read that, John.
Dagmar is a good fan. He's a loyal fan. Michael, post this on Facebook. John, according to Sam Munson's analysis, where is Kyle Orton in their voting? I'm not suggesting Orton is MVP, because obviously he is not. According to the Pro Football Focus analysis, he should be in the running, though, like Rivers. Also, I still don't understand his argument that a short route is easier than a long route. He could not answer your point about an easy throw to a receiver 15 or more yards down the field. No, he didn't. Then Brent answers that question on Facebook by saying, I would be the best quarterback if I threw Hail Mary passes all game. Obviously, Brent's got some game, I guess. Wow. He says, this is a joke, right? People actually take this website seriously? Have him define a blitz. I would suppose the definition of a blitz would be bringing more than your frontline pressure. So if you're in a 3-4 defense, you'd have to be applying more than three people. If you're in a 4-3, you'd have to be applying more than four. Stands to reason, right? You're bringing an outside backer. You're bringing a safety. You're bringing a corner. That, to me, is the definition of a blitz, when you're bringing an extra rusher rather than your basic formation, your base formation. Has to be that way. Has to be that way. All right, let's try then a few more emails here.
Are you seeing these?
Yeah, I'm seeing them.
My fingers are hurting over here.
That's good. Listen, did we not challenge emailers today?
We did. They're stepping up big time, and I think the lightning rod that we had on for the last half an hour probably helped too.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I do like that. I'm impressed thus far. Let's start with which one do I need to start with there, Kevin? Help me out here. I got to look at this entire list.
I'd say you can just pretty much go from anywhere. They're all pretty much angry fans.
It's all right.
Nobody all worthy of being read too.
All right. We're going to get to all of them that we can. You know what? Let's do this. Let's take a break here. We're right at the tail end of hour number one. Armando Salguero from Miami Herald is going to come up in hour number two, but we're going to spend our time here looking at your emails. We'll continue with this debate. We've got questions of the day. We got Pro Bowl issues that we still need to discuss and get into. Who do you feel like was a good choice? Who was not a good choice? And I think there's some obvious answers here. And who was snubbed in your estimation as far as the Patriots are concerned? We've got some good stuff to get into today. So let's pause here, and then we jump right back into the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees, and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. And account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
There you go, 508-543-7482, the Ace Ticket Hotline, web radio at patriots.com, the email address, Facebook page up and rolling and rocking here today as we enter into hour number two of Patriots Playbook for Wednesday. If you missed it and you're just tuning in here at the top of the hour, by all means, you need to do yourself a favor and you need to download the podcast or at least listen to us on playback later this evening here on patriots.com. Our guest, Sam Munson from ProFootballFocus.com. Trying to make the argument on why Tom Brady is not the MVP in the NFL. We've got a tremendous amount of reaction, and I'm going to get to many of these emails. And let me and keep them coming, by the way. If we don't get to them, it doesn't mean we don't read them. I'm going to read as many as I can. A lot of them are like this one. This comes from John in Dallas, who says, I don't know who that bozo is talking with the Irish accent, but he needs to stick to football. You know, the European version that uses the legs. Stats are stats. Whether those stats come at various points or whether a defender didn't make an interception on a poorly thrown ball is ridiculous. Doesn't matter if Brady plays with a cast of characters that were virtually undrafted or not. It's about production, wins, stats, and what Brady means to this team. 13-2 is our record in big part because of Brady. Ask your Irish friend of the Pats would be 13-2 with Michael Vick at quarterback. Okay. Good one, John. Brian sends this. The credit for the Patriots' success, this was part of our question of the day that came from our Facebook friend Joshua. He says, the credit for the Patriots' success, in my opinion, should go to both sides equally, Belichick and Brady, because you can't have one without the other. If it weren't for the decision-making done by the coaches calling the plays on both the offense and the defense side, then we wouldn't be where we are right now. Same can go for all of the players as well, because they made the plays that needed to be made on the field at the right time. You can't name one individual for an overall team success. The team is made up of coaches and players, and that's the reason for the success the Patriots have had. That also, Brian, is part of the reason why Tom himself, in the MVP debate earlier this week, said that, you know, this is really a team award. Now, that's the answer that you would expect him to give. He can't really say anything else, nor would you expect him to say anything else. You know, that's the standard answer. Fact is that, you know, it is a team award, but it isn't a team award. Why even have an MVP then? A most valuable player. Why even have the award? If it's only a team award, why do you have it? Can't answer that question. So if you have it, then you try to figure out, based on a certain amount of criteria, some of it set in stone, obviously a lot of it not, and you do your best to try to decipher that. You try to put players on equal footing, and you try to consider what you can, you know, realistically compare equally amongst the players that you would consider to be candidates for MVP. And these would be leaders, go-to guys, not necessarily quarterbacks, but guys who have significant roles in their team's success or lack thereof. That really is what it all boils down to. Okay, John in South Carolina. So when did Deion Branch was in Seattle? He was one of the leading receivers in the NFL. No, then we should not say Brady made Deion Branch better. The system changed halfway through the season. Do that to Rivers and then see what happens. When you did it to Manning, well, he broke his own record for interceptions. Not a bad point, John. Sam in North Carolina on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Sam, welcome inside the playbook.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Sam.
That guy on there, he contradicted himself too much. I thought, especially when he mentioned the Chicago game where Brady threw a couple of passes that could have been picked. Well, how many games have you seen where Brady throws passes and nowhere does the defender even get close? Mm-hmm. I mean, countless games this season, I know the Detroit one especially, the game against the Jets, he threw passes that defenders never had a shot at, and he seemed to completely ignore that too. And if he really wants to go back to Brady against the blitz, I think against the blitz, a lot of that is, one, is does the receiver recognize it and make the adjustment and run the hot? And can the receiver beat the coverage? Because I remember watching the Green Bay game, and so many times when they blitzed, Brady had nowhere to go because the receivers couldn't beat the press man coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that, it's if he wants to talk about a team sport, then that's where it would apply. But
Brady still had the ability, though, on those hot reads to be able to put the ball in the right hands or throw it in the right direction. And I would argue that a lot of quarterbacks can do that.
Absolutely. And I think it's funny. He mentioned it's a team sport, but, you know, there are 45 guys active on the Packers every day. There are 45 guys active on the Falcons. Why does that not apply to them, too?
Well, it should. And if it does, and you're talking about two teams now that don't have the same record as the Patriots either.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, team success obviously has to be factored in, but how many quarterbacks can you throw into the Patriots and say they'd do well? You can't measure that. And I mean, the Eagles winning games without Vic, the Packers competing without Rodgers. I mean, there's no way to measure what the Pats would be without Brady, but why should that matter? I mean, Brady, anyone watching football this year knows that Brady's been the best.
It's hard to argue that point, and that's why we wanted, you know, Sam to be on the show, because his publication and his website have basically all season long had Brady out of the top one or two in terms of the MVP. They've had Phillip Rivers up there. They've had Michael Vick up there. As you heard, Matt Ryan has been up there. Now they've got Aaron Rodgers even passing Brady, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's just I got to hear this for myself.
The playoffs.
What's that?
The Packers barely even have a shot at the playoffs up until a couple weeks ago when the Giants blew it against the Eagles. The Packers were on the outside looking in.
You're right, and they're still on the outside looking in. They haven't clinched anything. They can win this weekend, I think, and get in the last spot. Is that correct?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I think that's it, but they still have to win. So they may control their own destiny, but the Patriots have been in now for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what I share your pain and your agony is all I can tell you.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for having me on, man. Love the show.
Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate the time. This one comes from Jay in Albany, who says, we're now basing MVP on throws that should have been caught. What? I know. That almost made me choke when he said that, you know, there are some throws there that Brady had against Chicago that should have been caught that weren't. Or, you know, there were some picks that were thrown that should have been picks. Well, yeah, but if my, you know, aunt had you-know-what, she'd be my uncle. I mean, come on. Thank you very much. I mean, oh, Lord, it's so ridiculous I just snorted. Let's move along here for a second before I say some things that I just don't really mean to say. We try to conduct a relatively...
It's a family show, John.
That's exactly my point. I'd like to do things above the board if I possibly can here. All right, this is from another John who says, how does this idiot's website measure leadership, character, motivation, etc.? He's basically saying Tom Brady is a system quarterback and infers that almost any other quarterback could or would succeed in the Pats system. Well, I'm sure Belichick would say, yes, it is part of our system, but players execute. Brady executes. He has for a decade. He has 3 rings, multiple records, and to say anyone could step in and take the Pats to a 13-2 record because of a system is absolutely stupid. Brady is MVP. Please ask your Irish friend who is the MVP if Brady is not. I did. And he has Aaron Rodgers ranked ahead of Tom Brady. It's that simple. That's what he said this week. In fact, he even had to hesitate on that, so I'm not even sure that's entirely accurate. Be honest with you on that one. But that's what he said. He said he had Aaron Rodgers above Tom Brady. Okay. Howard. John in South Carolina again. He says, so does this D-bag use the same logic when he looks at Vic throw a 10-yard pass that gets taken for a 70-yard touchdown? You know, I'm thinking probably, John, no. Sam sends this, not the same Sam that we interviewed, by the way. John, hope you had a great holiday. Thank you, Sam. Can't go through nitpicking without talking about a certain garbage safety who is the third best safety in his own team making the Pro Bowl. Well, I think garbage is a little bit strong. And I'm glad that you brought it up because we did talk about, you know, your opinion on the Pro Bowl picks of the Pats here in the early part of the program before we got nuked by Sam Munson today. But, you know, does he make boneheaded plays? Yeah. Does he probably operate too much on emotion rather than, you know, using what he has between his ears? Probably. He still has talent, okay? Anybody that argues the point that Brandon Merriweather doesn't have talent is just flat out wrong, and you're not watching what we're watching. He doesn't sometimes utilize his talent to the best of his ability because he doesn't think as much as he should on the field. And quite frankly, his role to think isn't as involved as, say, James Sanders's or Patrick Chung's or, for that matter, maybe even Jared Page's. That's not what he's supposed to do. He is supposed to read and react, and a lot of times his reacting is what gets him in trouble. Now, let's say this. He probably got a Pro Bowl nod, I'm going to guess, from his fellow players as a backup here. And again, you have to remember, he was the second leading vote-getter at his position amongst the fans. So that probably also had a lot to do with his, being named to the team. I think people see the big hits. I think players know of the reputation for big hits. Just like Rodney Harrison, predecessor before him, even in a Patriots uniform, Rodney was voted as one of the dirtiest players, quote-unquote dirtiest players in the NFL when he was here. And when he was with San Diego, and he still made Pro Bowls. Why? Because he had respect. Did he do what he was supposed to do by the letter of the law, by the rule in the book? No, not all the time. And he was fined accordingly. Same thing goes here with Brandon Merriweather, especially for this past season. I'll put it to you this way. The receivers respect Brandon Merriweather. Because now when they go over the middle against the Patriots, they're thinking about number 31 being out there because of the hits they know he can levy. And that, my friends, is half the battle won in pass defense. You put a thought in the receivers' heads, you're not going over the middle of the field without a little bit of trepidation. And if you're not going over the field with, a quote-unquote balls-out attitude, you know what? You've lost. You've lost. So, okay, third best safety on the team? Okay, subject conjecture. Garbage? No. He's not garbage. He's not garbage. What do we have here? Am I going backwards here?
We have a guest in studio, John.
Oh, yeah? Who's our guest in studio?
What's up, JR?
Hey, Big E, what's happening?
I just got back from posting my blog update about practice, and I thought I'd come and fill you guys in, too.
Fire away. Shoot it. What do we got today?
All right. Good news and bad news. There were 2 players who returned. That's the good news.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Dedrick and Aaron Hernandez, who both missed time last week and missed the game. Okay. On Sunday. Bad news, though, discouraging news. Ron Brace, who played in the game after having missed the previous one with a concussion, was not out there. And by out there, I mean in the Dana-Farber Fieldhouse practice bubble, where they were having a glorified walkthrough practice.
Mm-hmm.
They had jerseys and helmets, but they didn't have pads and
no shells. Going,
no shells, nothing yeah. of the okay. of that kind. So for a practice where there's not going to be any hitting, for a guy not to be there, it's a little bit of discouraging news for him.
Yeah, I would say so. That really, you know, speaks to the issue that's been kind of a problem area over the last few weeks here is the defensive line depth.
Right, right. And still no Mike Wright. We've seen hide nor hair of him.
I can't believe he's going to has a chance to come back, and I'm surprised they haven't put him on the IR.
Well, it's getting later and later in the season here, and they're running out of time, really.
They
should make a decision because you need a playoff roster that's going to be contributing. And if he's not going to be able to contribute, then that's one roster spot that is always going to be a wasted spot, basically. So they have to figure out what they're going to do with him there. Banta Kane missed last week with a groin, most of last week anyway, was not out there either. And Dan Connolly still suffering the effects of his concussion, apparently. Those were the four missing. Connolly, okay. Banta Kane, Brace, Wright. And like I said, on the positive side, Dedrick and Hernandez were back.
Okay, just best guess, because we're not going to know until, obviously, we see the enact is posted, you know, at some point in time over the weekend. Best guess, how do the Patriots play this? Do they play it like a glorified exhibition, or do the regulars, you know, get to play a little bit more than that?
I think my gut tells me the regular starters will start the game, but won't play very much. It'll be kind of like that Miami game in 05 when Castle got most of the reps and led the near comeback at the end there when he was a rookie,
mm-hmm.
when they had everything sewn up and there was really nothing much to play for. That's kind of the impression I'm going to get, because with all the players banged up, they really need some time to rest. And it's, you know, this is a good week to do it. They'll have next week completely off, and then in earnest, get to prepare for whoever their opponent is in the divisional round.
Right.
So I would say play a little bit in the first quarter or so, and then sit some guys.
I think we made this call last week that was probably the right way to go, as much as it may be distasteful, that you still have to look at the bigger picture here where the Patriots are concerned. And when you have everything clenched, you have absolutely nothing to gain by winning or losing this weekend. Miami has nothing to gain by winning or losing other than pride and finishing 8-8 as opposed to 7-9. And I'm not even sure finishing 8-8 can save Tony Sperano's job there.
Probably not.
This is going to be the ultimate garbage game in the National Football League, the kind of game the league had hoped to avoid, but unfortunately they can't avoid this weekend.
Right. Yeah, it's the whole hope with the divisional matchups, in some cases, may work out like last, you know, Monday night we had Saints Falcons,
sure,
which
sure,
was a
worked.
Great game. That worked out well.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the flip side, you have a game like this one, which is meaningless. So, you know, I think the jury's still out on whether or not it's been an effective move to have these division games in the beginning and the end of the season.
Well, let's kind of look at it from a practical point of view. In the AFC, there's only one spot technically that's up for grabs. Is that correct?
The Jags are fighting with
the
Indianapolis to win that. Whoever wins the division
gets
the playoff spot, because right now it's Baltimore and the Jets have the lock on the 5-6, and Jacksonville's on the outside looking in. They're the only ones.
Right. So that would be for the. Well, do we even know? Is that the 4 or the 3 seed? It'd be the 4 seed, right?
Be the 4th. Yeah.
Okay. So that puts Kansas City in as a 3.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's flipping amazing. In the NFC, you've still got, the South Division, for one, has still got to be decided thanks to the Saints beating up on the Falcons on Monday night.
Right. And I see that still going to the Falcons. They have the they have the Panthers
right
this weekend. So,
but you still got to play the game.
You still have to play the game, sure.
That's
but
right.
I don't see the Falcons losing that. I see them getting the 1 seed. I see the Saints going in as a wild card. I see the Bears at 2 in the NFC, which means, I think Philly's already secured the 3. I think as of last night, despite the loss, I think they've secured the 3 spot. If I heard right on ESPN this morning.
Okay.
So that leaves, I'm going to say St. Louis to win that division as a losing record team and get the 4 seed. And that leaves only one, the Packers, as the probably, is my guess, going to be the 6.
Can play their way in if they get
it. Play their way in, yeah.
Right. So there still are some berths, you know, or some decisions to be made, but one berth technically. Or 2 berths, I guess, if you consider the Colt, Jacksonville survivor gets in. The loser doesn't go to the playoffs at all. The other one stays home.
Right.
So a couple of spots then really open in Week 17.
And I guess Indy at Oakland isn't a gimme for Indy.
No,
because
I wouldn't think it would be.
The Raiders have been a mercurial team this year. You never know what you're going to get from them. And they're at home,
mm-hmm.
right? It's in Oakland?
Right, I believe so.
So
I haven't looked at the schedule.
Yeah, it's not a guarantee. That they're going to win it, but something tells me they will, and Jacksonville's going to screw it up. But I tell you, I wouldn't mind seeing the Jaguars backdoor it.
It could still happen. I think it'd be unlikely. I have to agree with you. I think the Colts probably find a way to do that. But, you know, the Colts were, I mean, the Jaguars were looking at, you know, division title, what, 2-3 weeks ago, and now it's just completely come unraveled.
Yeah, they should have beaten the Colts in Indy. If they had done that, we wouldn't even be talking
about
this.
We wouldn't be having
this,
and the AFC would be all set. You know, and
yeah.
this would be garbage weekend, and I'm guaranteeing you that would be a consideration. You know, in the current talks, I mean, they tried to make some headway into improving things, and you know, obviously, it's not going to happen. I'm not so sure it would be to the NFL's advantage if this were a total garbage weekend, because they're trying to add 2 more games into the regular season.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I don't think that would add to their fuel to the fire where that argument is concerned.
No.
So, all right, interesting. Thanks. Are you going to stick around for a few minutes?
I can stick for about another 15 or so.
All right, we're going to try to we're efforting Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald to talk about it. One of the amazing things, I think, with the Dolphins season this year is the fact that this team is 6-1 on the road.
And nearly the opposite at home, yeah.
Yeah, and which is a better road record than the Patriots have, and yet they're 1-7 at home, which is just, I don't think I've ever seen that. I really don't know that I've ever seen that outside of, you know, the 0-14 1976 Tampa Bay Bucks. Mm. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Weren't the Giants in 2007 a great road team? And not
but
so
they,
great at home? I mean, it wasn't they, as bad as Miami.
1-7.
No, not that bad, but they were... I think they were a better road team than a home team in that year, if my memory serves.
I don't even know that anybody in Miami would have the answer to why they have been the way they have been, but we thought we'd at least try to ask that question, because I think it's rather remarkable.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen, you know, that this Miami team clearly has some talent. They clearly have some matchup advantages against the Patriots. They seem to match up pretty well, certainly when you're looking at skill position to skill position against the Patriots. And yet, you know, the ultimate, deciding factor here is, well, Chad Henne hasn't produced like he probably should have. They're underproducing in the running game, which leads you to believe that the offensive line has got to be underachieving somewhat. And if they're underachieving, then, well, what about the coaching staff? And, you know, does a guy like Tony Sperano, does he get another shot here? You know?
Yeah. My instincts say he's done.
Do you think he is?
Yeah. Just from afar, that's kind of the sense I get. And probably the GM, too, Ireland.
Well, that's kind of what I think of. But if they're going to do that...
It'd be interesting what Armando says, because he obviously is more closely tied into it than we are. But
all right, let's bring him in. Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald joins us here in Patriots Playbook. Armando, it's John and Eric here in Foxborough. How's it going?
I agree with you guys.
Fire
Good.
Away then.
All right.
Good. Go for it.
You're right. You don't need me. You don't need me. You got it nailed.
No, we want to hear from the expert. We want to hear from the guy who covers this team day in and day out. What happens in the immediate future here in terms of the Dolphins and their hierarchy?
Well, if you had asked me this Sunday night, I would have had a more definitive answer for you, because Sunday night they just concluded their home schedule, and they had just concluded their home schedule having won 1 out of 8 games at home. And Chad Henne was getting booed. The team was getting booed. The owner was getting booed. The offense was getting booed. I'm shocked that the media didn't get booed. I'm shocked that the cheerleaders didn't get booed.
Not the cheerleaders.
Yeah, well, true. But it was bad. And Stephen Ross, who's the owner, left the stadium. He was clearly not a happy camper. Didn't want to address whether or not he is going to bring back Tony Sperano and Jeff Ireland. Guys, when you don't want to address whether or not you want to bring somebody back, that's because there's a question in your mind. And if there's a question in your mind and you've been 1-7 at home and you need to sell tickets, that's a huge, huge question mark. But what I've been told here in the last couple of days is that Sperano has talked to Ross on the phone and that, you know, kind of tried to talk him off the ledge, so to speak. They plan to meet, you know, later on after the season. And I assume that Sperano will, you know, lobby for his job and try to explain why things have happened the way they've happened. I would like to tell you that Stephen Ross is a man that is going, that knows football and can make a football decision, but I don't think he really is. He's a realtor. He's an architect. He's a construction guy. That's how he made his money, in land deals, not necessarily, you know, football. So I have no real inside knowledge as to where he is today. But I do know that, you know, he goes kind of back and forth with this issue. I just don't know where he's going to be when he finally comes down to making the decision.
All right, give us your gut then.
If the Dolphins go up there and beat the Patriots and, you know, come out 8-8 out of what is obviously still a disappointing season because, again, the 8-8 is constructed with a 1-7 record at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the case will be made by, obviously, Sperano, Jeff Ireland, and Bill Parcells that maybe one more year it can get done because they do have the number 4 or 5 defense in the NFL, and last year it was 22. Now they are 29th in the NFL in scoring. They will say that they are able to remake the offense in a year like they remade the defense in a year.
Even if they beat a Patriots team that isn't really firing on all cylinders with the starters? Yeah.
Yeah. Sperano said today that he expects the Patriots to give their A1 best effort, and everybody kind of snickered. That's the case he'll make. I get that. If they get handled by the Patriots and in part the Patriots second teamers at all, it's over. It's done, and he's got no shot.
I think that's probably a fair assessment. Why, if you can put your finger on one or two key reasons, why did this team go 1-7 at home? I just think that's almost inexplicable.
It is inexplicable in that it wasn't early on. Early on, it was very explicable because they were losing to teams like Pittsburgh. You know, they obviously lost to the Patriots, who only happen to have the best record in the NFL. They lost to the Jets, who have a pretty good record and are a playoff team. They lost to Pittsburgh, as I mentioned. And so they were losing to good teams. But in the last three games, they've lost to Buffalo, Cleveland, and Detroit. And I know that Cleveland beat the Patriots. I get that. But Cleveland's not a good team. I'm sorry. They're just not. And if they're coming down to Miami and beating the Miami Dolphins, and then the Bills are coming down to Miami and beating the Miami Dolphins, and then the Lions are coming down to Miami and beating the Miami Dolphins, the Miami Dolphins stink at home. And that falls on the shoulders of, you know, a couple of people. Number one, the quarterback's not good enough. Number two, the coach isn't doing a good enough job. Number three, they're not scoring any points. And so, you know, that's the offensive coordinator.
There were a lot of people earlier in the offseason and during training camp who were of the opinion that Chad Henne was essentially the second coming of Dan Marino. Did you hear that same sort of talking, were you a believer in that theory?
No. There was actually, yeah, there was actually people that were making comparisons between Henny and Tom Brady. You know, both of them coming out of Michigan. Obviously, Henny got his shot last year when the starter went down. Didn't win the Super Bowl, but, you know, wasn't terrible. And they figured that, you know, this year he might make the jump and, you know, maybe throw twice as many touchdowns as interceptions, except that he hasn't done that. He's thrown more interceptions than touchdowns. He looks robotic at times. He looks browbeaten at times, afraid not to make a mistake. And if you, you know, I can't break down the X's and O's of what great quarterback play must be. But one thing I do know that what great quarterback play must be is you can't be afraid. And Chad Henne plays oftentimes afraid. He plays to not make the mistake, and then undoubtedly, predictably, he makes the mistake he is so afraid not to make. And it's a formula for being a failure.
Armando Salguero covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, joining us here in Patriots Playbook. What has gone well, in your estimation?
Oh, my gosh, the defense, like I mentioned earlier, they were number 22, 23 in the NFL last year. Clearly too slow, too old, not very aggressive. They fired Paul Pasqualoni.
Right.
They got rid of Joey Porter. They didn't re-sign Jason Taylor, you know, guys that were long in the tooth. They went out and got younger, got faster. Cameron Wake, a CFL guy, emerged. He's leading the NFL in sacks now. And they hired Mike Nolan, who's a very good coach, comes out of the Baltimore Ravens, you know, organization in part. And they've turned it around in that regard. Remember when the Patriots, what was it? They scored 41 points on the Dolphins, if I recall correctly, in their first meeting. 21 of those were directly tied to A, the offense, or B, the special teams. It wasn't on the defense that damage was being done. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's been the theme most of the season. A lot of the points that the Dolphins are giving up on defense are points that they give up when the offense gives the other team the ball, you know, on the 30 going in, or on the 25. And so that's a hard way to win, but the defense has managed to, you know, overcome a lot of that, and they are clearly, everybody down here believes that that is a playoff-caliber defense now, and it's going to get better because it's very young. You know, that's the one thing that they've got to hang their hat on right now.
I would say that, you know, certainly Cameron Wake's presence on the defensive line has been an eye-opener for me, and I know a lot of other people, to the point where Patriots now are bringing in guys from the Canadian Football League almost on a semi-regular basis now, because they're hoping to find the next Cameron Wake somewhere.
On tryout basis, at least.
Yeah, on a tryout basis, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. And the astonishing thing is that this is a guy that not only had to come from the CFL, but before he made it in the CFL. He was undrafted. He washed out in a couple of, you know, training camps, NFL training camps, and he spent, you know, like 6 or 7 months selling realty. And so, because he couldn't land a tryout, he couldn't land. And so, it's amazing, you know, the heights that he has climbed to after being at such depths. And, you know, he was a star in the CFL. They did a good job in obviously finding him and finding him first. But I do know that when Cameron Wake signed, there were 11 other teams that were trying to sign him as well.
Sure. I certainly believe that. Well, it seems then like there's many different directions that this football team can go, the Miami team can go. In terms of this weekend, do you have any reason to believe that they won't try to put their best foot forward and try to win this game and try to, if not save Tony Sparano, you know, or in Ireland's job, Jeff Ireland's jobs, that they'll try to do this for themselves and try to get a win?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I wouldn't say to you that, you know, there's going to be a win one for the Gipper speech before the game. Let's win one for Tony and Jeff. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, these guys are professionals, and they know what's at stake, and they know that if a new administration comes in, if new coaches come in, everything that they have established could go out the window. I mean, the last time that the Dolphins made a switch, you know, I think everyone but three players survived eventually. And so people know that a change in the coaching staff means you are on the line. So obviously I think the players will be playing like they are on the line. And it's not so much about the coaching staff and the general manager's job being at stake. It's about their hides being at stake.
I think that that's pretty accurate. Yeah, if I'm going out there on the field and I know what's transpired over the course of the season, I'm very disappointed, but I know I have one last shot. I think the bottom line is that knowing that there's liable to be a changeover in the hierarchy, in the management, I'm playing for my job, and it doesn't matter to me who we're playing, whether it's the Patriots or whether it's, you know, the 1-75 Carolina Panthers. I'm going out there to bust my butt because I'm not so sure where my job is going to be next year or where I'm going to figure into somebody else's plans. And so anybody that says, oh, the Dolphins don't have anything to play for, and I've heard this from a lot of fans already, the Patriots don't have much to play for, true, but they can at least, you know, hey, they got the playoffs to look forward to. The Dolphins have nothing to play forward for, so I don't see them coming in and playing well at all. That couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, you got to have to really, I think, literally have strapped it on before to understand that way of thinking.
The Dolphins have nothing to lose, everything to gain. The Patriots are the best team in the NFL right now. They have the best record. They have the best quarterback. He's the MVP. They have the running back with the longest name in the NFL. It's wonderful. And so...
Pretty good coach, too.
Right. And so, yes, Bill Belichick, he's done okay in his career.
It is what it is.
So therefore, you know, if they have any competitive spirit whatever, if they are alive, they will look at this as their grand opportunity to, you know, put a little icing on what is otherwise sour milk, you know, try to get something out of what has been a terrible season for them, even at, you know, 7-8. That's a bad season for them considering their expectations. And so I do think that you'll see the best that they have to give. The question is their best, you know, good enough against, you know, arguably the most talented team, if not one of the most talented teams in the NFL.
Right. Very good. Armando, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. Make sure you bring your gloves and your winter hat up here when you come up this weekend.
I've got some Tom Brady Uggs.
Oh, boy.
I'm ready.
You're a brave man to admit that.
I love it. Hey, thanks for spending some time with us today. We sure appreciate it.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
You got it.
Take care.
Armando Salguero, who covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald here in the playbook. Good stuff, E. I wouldn't expect anything less from Miami. You know that they're going to come full bore at the Patriots. You know, it just really depends on... You know, the bottom line is going to come down to whether or not the Patriots' second teamers can outperform them.
Right.
That's what's going to decide a win or a loss on Sunday.
Yeah, you're right, and I think Armando was right. These guys aren't playing for their head coach or their general manager. They're playing for their own
themselves.
Jobs. Yeah, that's all. They just want to, whether it's a job in Miami or a job elsewhere via free agency, they're just worried about, you know, taking care of number one, and that's themselves.
Good stuff.
So I'm heading to the locker room for some interviews.
All right, baby. I'll see you tomorrow.
So we'll talk tomorrow. Yep.
You got it. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly with the practice update, and we'll get more from him tomorrow. Let's jump back into the emails because we've got a bunch of them here that I do want to share. I've spent a few minutes here while we were talking to Armando kind of going through some of them, and I've read every one of them. I want you to know that I've actually gone through every email that I've received here in my inbox. What I'm going to try to do here is I'm going to read as many as I can. I'm going to try to at least choose ones that I feel are representative and alike others so that different points of view can get put into play, and different opinions can get put into play. If one email is the same as another opinion, then basically it's going to be first come, first served here. But I want you to know, I've read them all here today, and I'm laughing at all of them. For instance, this one comes from Sam. Sam writes this about our guest earlier today. John, hope you had a great holiday. Thank you. I hit the wrong one. That was the one that I had on Brandon Merriweather before Eric joined us. This one comes from John, who sent several passionate, short burst emails. So he was obviously reacting in a pinch, I think, to Sam, who joined us earlier on the program. Sam Munson from ProFootballFocus.com. He says, Philly won two games without Vic this year, including beating Atlanta with Kevin Cobb at quarterback. Just thought, you know, he wanted to kind of bring that up when it comes to, I guess, comparison statistics.
Playbook.
And then he says, drop this guy. He wants it both ways. He uses the 45 guys crutch when it suits his purpose and runs from it when he doesn't. That obviously was, I thought, part of what we were getting there toward the tail end of the conversation.
Tough to blow up the guest, though, you know?
No, I can't really do that when we ask him to come on. This is another John who says, every team maximizes their talent. To say the Patriots are the only team is crazy. Your current guest is a complete and utter moron. Ask him, one, does his mathematical analysis take into account the number of interceptions versus touchdowns?
I heard he's retarded or something.
Number two, subtract two interceptions he threw to Randy Moss in the Jets game because Moss didn't try. Now, that's an alleged happenstance, but also part of what led, so we think, to the Randy Moss, downhill slippery slope here in New England and on his way out the door.
I tell you what, though, John, if we were in a court of law today debating who should be the MVP, the solid facts and, you know, statistical
facts
information that we presented before the jury and the judge, I think it would have been a knockout in the first round, to liken it to boxing. It was there's no information to kind of back what they're trying to push on us. It seems like it has, like, and I hate to accuse another outlet of being agenda driven, but it seemed like it was agenda driven.
Very simple, and I mentioned that earlier today. Based on the reaction that we got from Sam after the interview, I think they've got an agenda to push. Whether or not they're trying to push their statistical breakdown and analysis to try to get people to subscribe to the website, or if they're just looking at football from a completely different perspective and they like being the naysayer, they like being they just like being the sore thumb sticking out.
It was just hypothetical stuff.
Exactly. And maybe that's what they want to do. They call it Pro Football Focus. I'm not so sure that that's what they're focusing on.
Everyone sucks but me.
John in South Carolina, there are a lot of intangibles that they don't want to see. Wow, a stat rating while someone is blitzed should be a stat we follow, but completions, quarterback ratings, interceptions, touchdowns, and everything should not matter. You cannot just look at the numbers you want to look at. Completions matter, interceptions matter, touchdowns matter. And then John says, tell me where this D-bag lives.
Well, then in that case, you know, like, if interceptions and touchdowns and completions all matter, then Brady's first in the league in touchdown passes, and he's first in the league in terms of fewest interceptions.
Yeah, again, this is where the conflicting, you know, opinions come into play, and it seemed like, you know, his, you know, basic reaction kind of changed to suit his argument. Here's another one, a couple of good ones here. This is from, again, another John. I must have had about seven or eight different John's email today. It says, Brady puts the ball in a 6x6 inch window to those open receivers on the short patterns he was talking about. He says his accuracy is what separates him from the rest of the quarterbacks. And I couldn't agree more. To me, that kind of hits the nail on the head. Not many quarterbacks can lay it in there on those short, you know, routes, which is why, you know, I almost got into it with him over the longer downfield routes are more difficult to throw. That's hogwash. That's hogwash, because if you're in press, if you're running against press coverage, you got a defensive back that's on top of you, and you have to get it in there, as the emailer said, in a 6x6 or less square inch spot. I mean, it's got to be pinpoint, and if it's not, you got no hopes of the ball being caught, and you've got a great chance of the ball being picked off or certainly knocked away. I would argue that it takes a better quarterback to throw the closer route in a lot of ways. Absolutely a lot of ways. Toussaint sends this email. Rook, that guy was a complete joke. He wanted to penalize Brady because he doesn't throw deep every play or because he has good teammates. Last time I looked, Vic has all-stars around him in the skill positions. Aaron Rodgers has got great skill players as well. Brady leads in all statistical categories over all these guys. There are just Brady haters. And by the way, I hated that guy's accent. We got something else on that concern coming up here in a little bit. I'm kind of jumping around here, so forgive me for jumping around a bit in the emails. Andrew from Utah says he's originally from Washington State, also used to live in Boston. Interesting listening to that conversation you had with a guy talking about why Brady shouldn't win the MVP, but I had a few thoughts. First off, the argument that he's thrown more short passes than the other candidate is ridiculous. So are short passes easier? Are deeper passes that much more difficult? I understand they're different, but they're playing in the NFL. Every pass is a difficult pass because of the speed of the game and the talent. And shoot, Brady has thrown very well downfield this year. Let's not forget he's throwing downfield to players other than Randy Moss, or not even to players like Roddy White, Greg Jennings, Reggie Wayne, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, Dwayne Bowe, or even others. He throws it downfield to Branch, Welker, Tate, Gronk, Hernandez. Only one of those is really considered a, quote, speed guy, Tate. But he's nowhere near the receiver that the other quarterbacks have. Secondly, the argument that Brady has made some bad throws this year, and they take into consideration those throws as well. Well, I guess Brady's thrown more bad passes this year than any of the other MVP candidates. If the coach would have just put Uncle Rico in the game back in high school, he'd be living up in a hot tub somewhere, rich and famous. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. Can't judge on things that never happened. And by the way, he said last week you mentioned he'd like to know the ages of your listeners. I am 27. Thanks, John. Keep up the great work.
He's in my age bracket.
There you go, Kev. There you go. That's a little younger than I think the majority of our listeners and contributors are, but that's great. I'm pleased to know that. See, Kevin, you might be bringing the younger demo into the audience.
Could be trying to be good for ratings here, John.
Well, we want to be.
We want ratings to be up through the holiday season.
And we want ratings to be solid in all of the numbers, right? Not just, you know,
we need all demographics
plus.
Firing on all cylinders,
yes,
here.
We want, yes, that's right, firing on all cylinders and all demographics. TGNNJ says, so what have we learned? Anybody with a DVR and a website can now be an NFL analyst. Just go ask Mike Florio. hey, let me say this about Mike Florio. You know, he's actually done some of his homework, and he's parlayed his, you know, little rumor website into a huge gig now with NBC Sports. So more power to him. Isn't America a great country? Because, man alive, I don't know that it would happen anywhere else. Maybe that's what Pro Football Focus is trying to do. I don't know. But you know what? You got to pass the smell test. This doesn't. Yemi from Texas says that guy is a moron. Matt Ryan has a 6.51 yard per attempt average. That's in the 20s among NFL quarterbacks. For a guy who supposedly throws down the field half the time, his yards per attempt is pretty low. Doesn't Reggie Wayne play for the Colts? People like to forget this when trying to prop Manning up for playing with scrubs. The guy has an anti-Brady bias. Why does Manning get credit for Jacob Tammy's 60 catches, but Brady doesn't get credit for Gronkowski's success? All good points here. This is the one I think that I really like the most. It comes from Larry the Drunk. Sam Munson, you are a fool. No reason, no logic. You play a few seasons in the Irish American Football League and you think you're an expert. Leave it to the Americans, you fool. Go back to playing Madden and dreaming of being a Super Bowl winning quarterback. He probably didn't even know what American football was in the 90s. oh, my.
If you smell a sock of jockstrap.
Wait a second. I got a couple. Well, there was another one here in just a moment. I got to find the other one. He wrote me back, sent me another note. I just have to find it here.
It's the gladiators out there, man, not tennis players.
Tennis players? Yeah. Larry sends this one back. He says, I'm seriously ashamed to be from Ireland because that guy's an idiot. Oh, Larry, thank you. You're a winner. I love it. It's good stuff. All right, Todd in Nova Scotia. His blitz stat is interesting, but he made it sound like Brady's short passing game is easy, and any other quarterback of the same offense would be doing just as good as Brady. So my stupid quarterback is, in a copycat league, why don't other coaches abandon the long passing game and use the short passing game to win championships, since any good quarterback would be great in that system? I think it's a very good follow-up question. Copycat league. Why don't more coaches copy the short passing game? Because their quarterbacks can't throw it like Brady can. That's why. I guess we just have to hit some people over the head with an idiot stick. Joe in Pennsylvania. Just read the Pro Football Focus write-up of last week's game, Pat's Bills. Not one mention of Tom Brady in it. Did he play? Okay. That's good.
There's your proof for agenda.
Yeah, exactly. There wasn't one mention of him in
the write-up. It's not like he threw three touchdowns or anything. Don't worry about that.
Again, yeah, just not one mention. That's just baffling, mind-boggling. Steve in Texas on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Steve, you're in the playbook. What's up?
Hey, John. Here's my argument for Brady, period. Find another quarterback in the NFL that can go to Chicago in the snow and play like he's in Maui wearing shorts.
Yeah.
I don't get where you say Brady doesn't have the stats, the numbers, and the ability when the guy's throwing tight spirals like it's a summer's day.
And you saw what the other quarterback looked like in that game.
Yeah, and they're a cold weather team. So, mm-hmm. You know, Vic, Peyton, those other guys coming into the snow and playing, well, we saw what happened with the Eagles and the flurries that they got, and they didn't even play the game, so don't get me started.
I don't think he did he or his website or his staff any favors with his argument today. Again, I'm very grateful that he came on, and Kevin gets the credit for bringing him on the show because I know this was a debate that he and Andy started yesterday. But frankly, when I saw the story, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And, of course, we've had this argument going on for several weeks now when the MVP talk actually started heating up and that there were other candidates. And not that Tom Brady is the only MVP candidate out there. This is not what we're saying. Our biggest point is that we're kind of wondering where they're coming from and what their criteria for an MVP is when they have Brady rated as low as they have, and rated fourth, and in some cases, fifth. And I'm like, okay, second or third, I might be able to believe that. But fourth or fifth, when you consider where the Patriots as a team are, it just doesn't pass the smell test. And that's why, when we started considering MVPs and talking about it, we wanted to try to get to the root of the problem, and we're glad that they agreed to come on and talk to us about it.
319 with Nary and INT, I don't see anybody else close to that either,
nope.
John. So
nope.
I don't know how it ended up so skewed, but appreciate what you guys do, and you continue to have a great holiday, sir.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the time. You got it. It's just one of those crazy things, and, there has to be a little bit of an agenda, a little bit of a bias-driven agenda here. It's the only other reason I can possibly come up with, only plausible logic I can put in the situation here. Mark sends this. He says, I've been reading PFF for a bit. This is Pro Football Focus, our subject of a lot of our disdain today. He says, and I think, and you may want to ask if you have him on again, I think they're trying to use their grades of the players to help them make their MVP choices. And, Mark, I think you're exactly correct. They're grading players individually, and they're going just on the grade in terms of their MVP selection. Otherwise, why? It doesn't make sense. Mark says, you're using one set of criteria, and he was using another. And I think your criteria, meaning ours, mine, more closely mirrors how the real voters make their choices. And I would agree with you, Mark. The thing I took away from the interview is they're trying to separate each player away from their teammates into a grade, which is a highly subjective thing for an outsider to do, which is probably why they grade passing difficulty versus what the coaches would do. Did the quarterback do the right thing, in other words? Their biggest mistake is calling what they are doing an MVP ranking because it's more a ranking using their grades, not how the real MVP voting will go. And Mark is writing us from Newton, Kansas today. Mark, you're, I think, ding, ding, ding. I think you hit the nail on the head.
You know what kind of amazes me, John? I just had a weird thought that came across my head. Yep. After our interview with Sam, I then realized that there are 9 other guys and that write for this website and that are part of this website that think the exact same way. And that baffles me.
It tells me 2 things. One, there's 9, followers, not leaders, in terms of independent thinking, number one. Or number two, there's 9 batches of bad Kool-Aid about to be drunk.
Because how could you have 10 guys who consider themselves educated football minds and that write for this publication that people pay to read and subscribe to, how could you have 10 minds and not one of the 10 be rational enough to have Brady as the MVP?
Or here's the other thing. why would you have 10 guys all write the same thing anyway? I mean, I would think
too.
You'd want to have at least
you'd
one
have
contrarian
varying
to bring in the other point of view.
And I will
because when you bring in the other point of view, then you allow your readers or listeners in this case, which is what we try to do on this program every day we have the program. We want to bring in a different point of view so you can make up your own mind on what you believe.
Yeah, and I want to say, like, you know, we have lightning rods in this town, like Mike Felger, whose opinions may not always be popular, but at least it brings, like, a fresh take to the argument. This website seems like it just has everything the same, like uniform thinking. And not only is it uniform, but it's wrong.
Sean sends this email. He says, John, here's the problem. There's a vast amount of patriot hate across the nation. You don't see it because you're up there. But take it from me here in Florida. People begin each season praying that the Patriots fail, and when they don't, they nitpick, and they take whatever shots they can find. God, I really hope they win it all this year. People down here will pay. you know, I would say that to an extent, yeah, probably. I also think that, you know, there's some, you know, people, first of all, they love to see the king fail. You get to the top of the heap, and people want to knock off the king on the hill. That's just the way it is in all walks of life, whether it's sport or business or anything. And that's what happens when you have champions. People want to knock off the champion because then they have a chance to be the champion. So that's number one. Number two, I think there's some ill will based on the whole Spygate issue from a few years ago and the way that the Patriots were steamrolling people in 07. And, you know, because none of this hate existed earlier in the past decade, especially around, you know, the 2001-2003 era, because the Patriots were a feel-good story. This was a team and a franchise that was basically coming from nowhere, that it had no real success at all in the past, and then voila, magically they beat the greatest show on turf in the St. Louis Rams, and now look at them. And so the Patriots have taken that and built on it into arguably, and maybe even inarguably, a dynasty. Certainly over the course of the 2000s, team of the decade, hard to argue that point. Some will, but I'm not so sure that your gun is full of bullets. And because of that, because you dominate over an extended period of time, especially in this day and age of parity, when everybody's supposed to be even, and yet the Patriots system, and I'm putting quotations around that word, the Patriots system seems to be successful. People are going to take shots at you, man. They're going to do everything they can to tear you down. And there's probably something to what Sean has to say there. But I would argue that, you know, if the Colts were in this position, if the Raiders were in this position, if the Vikings were in this position, the Falcons, anybody in this position, the Patriots are in, where they had done what the Patriots had done over the last 10, 11 years, they would also have hate. They would be haters out there. And, you know, they would be hating on the Patriots quarterback or the Falcons quarterback or whoever, you know, the quarterback of the subject was going to be in the MVP discussion. This is all comes with the territory when you're the kingpin and people want to take a shot at you. And that's why you're going to get some of this. Tiff from Wisconsin chimes in. Thanks, Tiff. John, love the show. That guy tried to have it both ways at least three times. He discounts the fact that Brady makes no-name receivers better by claiming the Pats wide receivers would be good anyway. Right after claiming that, he gives Ryan credit for Jenkins. In addition, he doesn't discount Ryan for having a future Hall of Fame tight end, but discounts Brady's success with rookies Gronk and Hernandez by stating they're good anyway. Yeah, hey, you're very observant, Tiff. Also, don't the Falcons have a Pro Bowl running back who's good for at least 100 to 150 yards per game? Yes. His name is Michael Turner. The Saints shut down Taylor and Ryan, still couldn't win the game from the Falcons. Also, still couldn't win the game for the Falcons, I should say. Also, weren't they in that alleged Atlanta home field juggernaut? They were. And the Saints still won the game. In addition, she says, I'm so sick of the system quarterback. The same people attacking Brady for being an assistant quarterback don't mind proclaiming what a great quarterback Montana was or how great Favre is. What's wrong with being a system quarterback? Also, Rogerson is in the system. We have to start challenging people when they begrudge Brady for being a system quarterback. It is a disingenuous argument. Tiff, you're on top of things today. Good job out of you. Good job on a lot of these emails today. I've just read a select few of them. Anthony says this, hey, guys, big fan of the show. Let's be realistic. Do you guys think that, well, we'll actually use all three of our top 33 picks in this upcoming draft, or do you think, well, trade them? We'll trade them. Anthony, I am hoping, and I think a lot of Patriots fans are also hoping, that they actually use It's hard to say top three of the 30, the three that they have of the top 33. My guess is they use the first. I'm going to make a prediction here and say they will use the first round picks this year. But they might take a few of the round 2 to 4 picks, package those together to be able to move up in a future draft. I think they keep the ones this year. Now, again, a lot of that's going to be, that could change. That's just an opinion based on what I think right now on December the 29th of 2010. Could change based on the CBA, which has still not been negotiated completely between the owners and players. We hope it gets done by March 4. Otherwise, we get a lockout, which won't be good for anybody. I just don't think we're going to get to that point. But based on what the new collective bargaining agreement is between owners and players, you could see the Patriots traded away. They may not. They may decide that, you know, hey, what, you know, our system of going for undrafted free agents and scrap heap guys and what have you, it's worked. That's the way we're going. We got too many picks. We're not paying all these guys. We're trading them down. We're trading them away. We're giving them away. Well, we're not going to give them away, but we're going to use them, package them together, and we're going to get future picks. And we're going to keep pushing it into the future. That could happen. I think they keep the ones. Don't be shocked if it happens and they trade again. It's what the Patriots do. That's what makes the Patriots the Patriots. Frankly, you'd be hard-pressed to say, well, why? Well, because it works. That's why. Mary Beth sends this via Facebook. In answer to the question, Brady or Belichick, I'm not sure how you could do anything without the whole team. Looking back at the 2008 season, 11-win, 5-loss, the Pats with Castle at the helm had a good season, so maybe the argument could be made for coach. But being the ultimate Patriot fan, I personally will take the Brady-Belichick combination any time. Well, naturally you will, and I think that's also a pretty good point there. Manish, John, are you surprised that Merriweather is in the Pro Bowl? I think Pat Chung and James Sanders deserve it more. Maybe, Manish, but as I did say earlier in the program, I'm not going to begrudge Merriweather's shot at getting in because Merriweather carries a lot of, I think he carries a lot of respect around the league. And he was also second at his position by the fans in Pro Bowl voting. You may not have voted for him. Patriots fans may not have voted for him. I'm sure there were some that blindly voted for him because he, you know, he wears the red, blue, and silver. But frankly, he was second in his position. It doesn't surprise me he got in there. So do you think he's deserving? Well, okay, you can certainly agree to disagree here. But yeah, he's deserving. He's just not the player you want him to be. He may not even be the player we want him to be. But he's still in the Pro Bowl. Let's see if I've got one or two more here. Jonathan, if you get the chance, please read this on the air, John. All I've heard from the guys at PFW is that Merriweather does not deserve his Pro Bowl spot, which is unfair because if he didn't deserve it, he wouldn't get it. Why can't everyone enjoy the fact that he has another Pro Bowl and our players are good enough to make it? Also, do you think Brady has locked up the MVP with his performance at Buffalo and Vic's performance last night? And one more thing, make sure you tell Andy and Kevin, I'm not related to Mike from Puerto Rico. Kevin, did you get that?
Okay. Mental note taken.
Okay, there you go. By the way, you send this note. Merriweather, 67 tackles, 3 picks. Chung, 94 tackles, 3 picks. Block field and a pick six. You know what? I can't argue that. Chung had a good year. He's, you know, if Merriweather is worthy, Chung is worthy. But what did I say earlier in the show, Kevin? Do you remember about Merriweather?
What were you saying again?
Do you remember what I said earlier in the show about Merriweather?
About him.
Why I think he got in?
I don't, to be honest with you.
Okay, that's all right. I'm just asking because people tune in at different times. He got into the show because his plays make news. His illegal hit, the one he got fined for.
Well, yeah, what I was gonna say, my answer was going to be, before I backpedaled, was do you think that maybe the guys like James Harrison and those guys who play on the edge,
yes,
kind of voted for him as like,
yes,
a brethren type thing?
Yes.
And that's what I kind of deducted from your earlier point.
Yes, all of the above. He's got a rep, and the receivers are going to vote for him too because they know he's over the middle. They know he's over the middle. They know that he can get speared, and you know, maybe he doesn't have any qualms like James Harrison. Maybe he doesn't have any qualms at all. I'll pay the fine. So what? It's my job to stop receivers, and if I can put the doubt in their heads, I've won the battle, or at least I'm on my way to winning the battle, and that's how defensive players look at it. There's no right or wrong here. He did get in. Jonathan's right with his post. you know, yeah, we should be celebrating it. You can debate the issue all you want, whether he's worthy or not. Are there other Patriots? Are there other players more worthy? Perhaps. Yeah, sure. Merriweather got the spot, and I think that's why. Big hits. I'm sure that probably won't please the NFL, but that's, it's a fact. It's absolutely a fact. Okay, I think that we hit most of the high water marks here. Coming up on the program, though, keep right here on Patriots.com radio, because Patriots Shop Talk is coming up next, and we'll get to some issues and I'm sure some post-holiday bargains that you can grab in the Pro Shop, and all that's coming up. Tomorrow here on the program, we will obviously be joined again by Eric Scalavino from PFW. Russell Baxter from ESPN will be in the fold as well. We may even continue this Brady or Belichick, which one is more valuable discussion tomorrow, since we really got knocked off track today by our buddy, Sam Munson. And who knows, we might even continue some of that talk as well, because it's been very good. I appreciate the feedback all and the participation today in the program. Thanks for tuning in. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, manana.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.